Det er fredag 5. april. Velkommen til en USA-spesial innenfor dagsorden. Vi skal altså vie denne sendingen til utviklingen i USA. Disse klippene er noe gamle, men de sier veldig mye om situasjonen, så de er like relevante og aktuelle som de var da de ble spilt inn i 22. mars, tror jeg. Og dere får se det med norske undertekster, for det er viktig for oss at alle kan følge med. Det første er et klipp av Jesse Waters, som jo har overtatt Tuckers plass på Fox. Og han svinger veldig mellom en litt tullete tone og veldig gode og skarpe innlegg. Og her hadde han et hvor han sa at kuppet er allerede i gang foran øynene våre. Og dette er nok ikke noe Rupert Murdoch er så veldig glad for, fordi han ga jo redaksjonen i Fox ordre om at Trump skulle bli en ikke-person. Og det sånn var det også i lang tid, at Trump var nesten fraværende fra Fox sendeflate, også den nettavisen. Men det var de jo nødt for å gjøre om på når Trump reiste seg og hadde et comeback som ingen før har hatt i amerikansk politikk. Og det er Trump som amerikanerne vil ha, og hvis ikke Fox er med på den vogna, så går de i grøfta. Og Jesse Waters forteller veldig klart hva det er som holder på å skje. Det er at den dype staten, som er New York Times og Washington Post og CIA og alle disse grenene, Justisdepartementet, FBI, som vi har lært å kjenne nå over 8 år. Det er derfor amerikanerne ligger så langt foran oss i erkjennelsen, for de har sett dette monsteret på nært hold. Vær så god, Jesse.
And last hour, polls closed in Florida. Former President Donald Trump voted in Palm Beach this afternoon alongside former First Lady Melania Trump. The couple strolling outside to address a gaggle of reporters who enjoyed having a president who actually answers questions.
They have to close the borders. Our country is dying. Our country is being overridden. This is an invasion.
How will you conduct a mass deportation?
That'll be very evident. It'll go very quickly. I will tell you that. It'll go the deportation. We're going to get the criminals out of our country right away.
Mrs. Trump, are you going to return to the campaign trail with your husband?
Stay tuned.
Who did you vote for? What are you trying to prove?
I voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Did somebody just say, who'd you vote for? Yeah, I voted for Donald Trump. Thank you.
Keep watching Fox's election results come in all night. So in the 1960s, Americans got a look behind the curtain of Washington. Operation Mockingbird, the CIA's plan to bait journalists with hoaxes disguised as scoops, got exposed.
Do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to a major circulation American journal?
We do have people who submit pieces to two American journals.
Langley was laundering narratives to the press and into the public's veins. The most trusted names in news were working wittingly or unwittingly as deep state conduits of disinformation. At least 22 American news organizations, from the New York Times to Life magazine to CBS, had journalists on the CIA payroll.
At CBS, had been contacted by the CIA. As a matter of fact, by the time I became the head of the whole news and public affairs operation in 1954, ships had been established, and I was told about them and asked if I'd carry on with them.
And the cover-up continues, although the lies are more blatant now.
There is no deep state.
There's no deep state. There's no great spy network who takes down presidents here.
There is no deep state, and we need to stop talking about it.
The deep state doesn't exist, okay? The spoiler alert, there is no deep state.
But today, my staff opened the New York Times and saw this. It turns out the deep state is actually kind of awesome. Not only does the deep state exist, but the deep state is filled with people just like you and me. To prove it, the New York Times took a road trip. First stop, they visited a Star Trek lover.
First stop, Huntsville, Alabama. Sure looks like some nefarious government activity happens around here. Meet Scott Bellamy.
I am a mission manager in the Planetary Missions Program Office.
He drives a Nissan Titan 4x4. He's loved Star Trek since he was a kid.
Of course I have a favorite character. It's either Captain Kirk or Mr. Spock.
And he may have quite literally saved the planet from annihilation. They knocked an asteroid off its course, proving something that had previously only been done in movies.
Saving the world from an Armageddon scenario.
And then the New York Times visited a water administrator.
Next, we traveled deep into the swamp itself, Washington, D.C.
I am the assistant administrator for water at the Environmental Protection Agency.
She loves Pilates, making salads. Oh, and she led an operation to make our drinking water lead-free in 10 years.
That's the dream.
You want to replace your own water pipes? You got the skills to launch an asteroid-deflecting spacecraft? No. That's why your tax dollars pay experts like Radhika and Scott. Yep, the deep state is hard at work, making America great. Just because we don't know about it doesn't make it suspicious.
Oh, and then there's the wage official at the Department of Labor.
I am the acting director of enforcement for the wage and hour division for the Midwest regional office for the U.S. Department of Labor. I had to take a breath, yes.
She still eats Lucky Charms for breakfast, trains for marathons, and loves Latin dancing.
Cumbia, bachata, cha-cha-cha, you name it, I did it.
And she uses your tax dollars to get kids out of working in dangerous slaughterhouses.
So the Times says when we hear deep state, instead of recoiling, we should rally around the everyday heroes who wake up ready to dedicate their careers and their lives to serving us. The New York Times is telling you the deep state isn't an intelligence cabal interfering in elections. It's merely civil servants who enjoy dancing, Lucky Charms, and Star Trek, just like you. The deep state kills asteroids and does Pilates. They don't illegally sabotage politicians they can't control. They're too busy making salads and keeping your water clean. As a matter of fact, thank you, deep state. Funny how the New York Times didn't take a road trip to Langley or the Bureau or the Pentagon or the Justice Department. Russia collusion, the laptop, the letter, the lab leak were probably cooked up at NASA. But this man's not a NASA official. He's a former CIA officer declaring America's greatest threat is Donald Trump.
The greatest threat to the United States right now is from within. Donald Trump has broken all norms. You can't say those things, or in the past you could not, without being condemned, you know, across the political spectrum, including from your own party. So the fact that this is now the norm is deeply troubling. And look, you know, we're going into uncharted territory here. So, you know, what happens if there is a contested election?
So what do we know about this guy? This CIA official was the chief recruiter to get 50 other spooks to sign onto that letter claiming Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation. He's the guy. And now he's back for the bloodbath hoax and publicly announcing Trump, not Russia, not China, not terrorism, is America's top threat. The deep state's telegraphing what they're going to do. Run a PR campaign saying we should rally around the deep state because they're good old American public servants who eat cereal and exercise just like you. And on the same day, send a guy behind the CIA letter to put a big fat target on Trump's back. Because when you're the CIA and you say something's a threat, what do you think the CIA is trained to do about threats? Just getting started. Not only is Trump a security threat, he's an unstable psychopath, they say.
He uses this apocalyptic language, this violent language consistently, almost on any topic. And the reason fundamentally is the true context. And the true context is his state of mind, his mental abilities and his personality disorders. He is a narcissistic psychopath. I mean, if you look at the definitions in the DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, he is clearly a sociopath.
Okay, so Biden's cognitive abilities are fine, but Trump's a sociopath. The deep state uses these propaganda techniques on our most dangerous enemies, like ISIS, like North Korean dictators, like the Russians. These are the same forces that are targeting the Republican nominee for president, a former president, because of his populist agenda and his inability to be manipulated. And so if someone's a domestic threat and they're an unpredictable sociopath, how do you bring in a counterintelligence operation to neutralize them? You link them to foreign powers, like the Russia hoax, and you use money to do it. Now, Trump has got to put up $500 million cash bond just to appeal his excessive fine in New York so Letitia James doesn't seize his properties.
The real problem that we as Americans need to be watching is where the money, if at all, comes from. Is it going to come from Qatar? Is it going to come from Saudi Arabia? Could it come through some back channel oligarch from Russia? If in fact that happens, just think about the danger that Donald Trump is putting America and our national security at risk. He will now be indebted to a foreign entity. And as a potential president of the United States, imagine if, God forbid, a million times that he wins. Imagine the indebtedness that he will have to a foreign entity over the benefit and the needs of America.
So now they've established a national security threat, foreign blackmail, and mental instability. And to make the Trump presidency even more dangerous, they warn of an impending American genocide if he isn't stopped.
He's going to come after immigrants. He's going to come after people of color. He was locking babies in cages as a matter of formal policy. He banned Muslim folks in this country as his first act as president. He will do that, and he will do even more. This is a man who likes words like poison, like American carnage, like bloodbath. Those are not metaphors. That is the intellectual and ideological universe in which he lives, one of violence, one of decay, one of death, and that is what he hopes to produce.
We're witnessing the beginning of another coup, a dark and dangerous chapter in America's here. They're combining the dictator on day one hoax with the bloodbath hoax to justify stopping Trump by any means necessary. The deep state's preparing for war. Limbaugh warned us.
What is going on in the deep state, the embedded bureaucracy where the Obama shadow government is doing everything it can to overthrow the Trump presidency. And make no mistake, that is what's happening. The media is now doing the bidding of the Obama shadow government. All these people leaking made up things, non-factual things that allow the media to continue to run stories that are nothing but speculation, that fall under the rubric of the seriousness of the charge.
Click here to subscribe to the Fox News YouTube page to catch our hottest interviews and most compelling analysis. You won't get it anywhere else.
Her så vi, jeg vet ikke om jeg skal ta, men han lille tjukkassen som snakket om at Trump var en narsissistisk psykopat. Han tilhører noe som heter The Lincoln Project. Og de var aktive før valget i 2020. De fikk, jeg tror det var noe sånn som $90 million. Et enormt beløp som de da brukte. De hadde en som brukte det på gutter og ble skandalisert. George Conway blir husket fordi han er gift, nemlig med Kellyanne Conway, som var en av valgkamplederne for Trump i 2016. Hun er meget dyktig, og jeg har problemer med å forstå hvordan det ekteskapet kan fungere. Men fordi de står altså på to vidt forskjellige fronter. Og så var det Michael Cohen, som en gang var Trumps advokat, som er dømt for å være en serieløgner. Men det står det jo ikke noe om når CNN bruker han som sannhetsvitne, fordi de bruker nå det de har. Demokratene og de illiberale mediene er desperate. Det får du ikke vite av norske medier, for de er også desperate, for det de ser at 5. november kan bety en ny periode med Trump. De har ikke noe svar på hvorfor Trump er så populær. De nekter å gå inn på det og tenke i de baner. I stedet så prøver de å sverte han og hans velgere. Og det har jo da, det er jo nå, etter 8 år, så er det som å skvette vann på gåsa. Men det klarer ikke disse radikaliserte demokratene å ta inn. Og derfor så bare synker de dypere og dypere. Det heter på amerikansk, hvis du befinner deg i et hull, så må du slutte å grave. Men det gjør ikke demokratene. De bare graver seg lenger og lenger ned. Nå skal vi se et nytt kutt, og det er et foredrag som den skotske historieprofessoren Neil Ferguson holdt på Austin University. Jeg tror han de prøver å stifte et nytt universitet der. Og Ferguson står og holder en tale om en bok som kom på 20-tallet, som jeg tenker kanskje vi kunne utgi på dokument. Den heter, den er på fransk. Jeg nevnte den på Skogpodden i dag også, La Trahison de Clerc av Julian Benda. Der er litt av flis, så det burde være overkommelig. Han beskrev hvordan de intellektuelle hadde sveket sin rolle som den kritiske stemmen i samfunnet. Og det er dette Ferguson ser som en parallell. De tyske eliteuniversitetene i Marburg og Jena og så videre ble steder for den radikale tenkningen som førte til nasjonalsosialismen. Og det er jo en meget ubehagelig assosiasjon at Harvard University, Yale University, var de stedene hvor studentene mest hissig sa «from the river to the sea». Og før det kom så langt at de marsjerte og nærmest krevde død over jødene, så hadde de gjennomgått årevis med kritisk raseteori og antirasisme mot hvite, altså en politisk programmering som over tid førte til at de ikke liker å høre meninger de ikke står 100% innenfor. Og her er det en undersøkelse som Ferguson viser til, og gir, altså han kom med den statistikken, og den er skremmende. Vær så god.
A political activist. It's that moment when the line is crossed from Wissenschaft, from scholarship or science, to politique, to politics. That is the fatal moment. As he was writing The Treason of the Intellectuals, German professors were already well on the way to providing justifications for the anti-Semitism that would be the foundation of Hitler's Third Reich. In our time, American professors have become apologists for the anti-Semitism and terrorism of Hamas. And I mean it very seriously when I say that the fate of the great German universities, of Heidelberg, of Tübingen, of Marburg, their fate in the 1930s and 1940s is a terrible warning to the elite universities of the United States. How bad you may say are our established universities? Let me tell you. According to the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, the number of campus deplatforming attempts soared to a record high last year. There were 137, up from 81 in 2022. Let's look at the latest Heterodox Academy report. In 2022, which is the most recent data we have, 59% of students reported being reluctant to discuss at least one of 5 controversial topics they were asked about. 62% of students said That was because, quote, other students would make critical comments with each other after class. 63% of students, this is in universities across the country, agreed that the climate on their campus prevented people from saying things they believe because others might find these views offensive. Now, what is remarkable is that when you look, and I have looked, at the data for individual universities, there is scarcely any real difference. Chicago is more or less the same as Harvard, which comes bottom of the FIRE rankings for free speech. It turns out that we have a nationwide problem. It isn't just Harvard. And it cannot possibly be healthy for our republic if 60% of students in universities across the country feel they cannot speak their minds in class. Let's talk about the illiberalism of the liberals. The Challey Institute, which is at North Dakota State, asked a series of fascinating questions, and I want to share them with you because I think the results will stun you. Question, and this was a survey again of students in four-year programs across the country, a large sample. If many students disagree with the views of someone who has been invited to speak on campus, should the university withdraw the invitation? Liberal and liberal-leaning students said yes in 39% of cases. Conservatives were on 17%. Question, if a required reading for a college class includes content that makes students feel uncomfortable, should that reading be dropped as a requirement? Liberal and liberal-leaning students, 42% said yes. Now get this. Question, if a professor says something that students find offensive, should that professor be reported to the university? 85% of liberal and liberal-leaning students said yes. Question, if a student says something that students find offensive, should that student be reported to the university? 76% of self-described liberal and liberal-leaning students said yes. In these conditions, of course, education becomes indoctrination. Question, have the classes and other academic activities you've participated in during the college year changed your view of the United States? 7% of liberal and liberal-leaning students said it had made their views more positive, 55% more negative. Amongst the conservative and conservative-leaning students, 18% said it had made their views more positive, but 32%, a third, said the experience had made their views of the United States more negative. Do you understand why we're building a new university yet? How do we explain this? What's the reason? Why has this quasi-totalitarian atmosphere spread so rapidly through American higher education and beyond? Because of course it spreads downwards into K through 12 and outwards into corporate America. I think John Haidt, my good friend, and Greg Lukianoff, my good friend, came up with a plausible sounding answer in a book that some of you will know, The Coddling of the American Mind. And their answer was essentially that parenting had produced a series of erroneous assumptions about the nature of life. And now Jonathan has published a new book in which he explains the epidemic of mental ill health amongst young Americans by blaming cell phones and social media. I respect these arguments, but I don't think those are the right explanations for what has gone wrong. I think there are two reasons. The first is the extraordinary and worsening political skew amongst academics, amongst the professors. And the second, which is just as bad, is the tendency of university leaders and administrators to appease or even encourage the new Red Guards in a kind of parody version of Mao's Cultural Revolution. Now, it's often said that professors are always left-wing, like it's just the way things are. Really? Was that the problem in 1920s Europe? Was that the problem in 1930s Germany? No. There's no preordained law that says professors are always liberal. And nor is it the case that it's a steady state. There's an article from 2005 by Rothman, Lichter, and Nevitt, which shows that in 1984, significant date in this context perhaps, 39% of the American professoriate on average described itself as left. By 1999, that had risen to 72%. At Harvard today, it's basically 95%. So this is not a steady state. There has been a pronounced swing to the left in academia. Mitchell Langbert did an amazing sample of the politics of nearly 9,000 tenure-track PhD-holding professors from 51 of the 66 top-ranked colleges in the US News and World Report of 2017. And he was able to find data on a pretty substantial proportion, 60%, for political registration. And that allowed him to calculate some interesting statistics. 39% of the colleges in his sample were Republican free. They had no registered Republicans amongst the professors. 78% of departments in his sample either had zero Republicans or so few as to make almost no difference. And the ratios are great. So the mean Democratic to Republican ratio amongst professors in the sample was 10.4 to 1. But that was skewed by the inclusion of the two military colleges at West Point and Annapolis, which are the only institutions in America which have a rough political balance in their faculty. So if you take them out, you discover that the real ratio is actually 13 to 1. In my subject history, 17.4 to 1. In English literature, 48 to 1. And in anthropology, you can't calculate it because you can't have a ratio of something to zero. But you say, Neil, you pessimistic Scotsman, the tide is turning. It's turning because two presidents of eminent colleges have resigned. Liz McGill at Penn and Claudine Gay at Harvard, and so we must have passed peak woke. The pendulum that people love to tell me about. Have you been told about the pendulum? I'd love to see this pendulum. It must be a very big clock, because this pendulum's been swinging for as long as I can remember. Oh, it's about to swing the other way, really. So let me read some headlines from the Harvard Crimson. Since Claudine Gay was forced to resign, not just for her complete mishandling of the events that followed October the 7th, but also because of her serial plagiarism, which included even plagiarizing the acknowledgements in one of her publications, a remarkable feat by any standards. January 3rd, in Gay's fall, a McCarthyist tragedy. January 3rd again, Gay's resignation is not a win against anti-Semitism. January the 4th, rebuffing calls to resign, Penny Pritzker, 81, will stay in top Harvard Corporation post. January the 5th, ex-Harvard President Claudine Gay acknowledges mistakes, calls critics demagogues.
Ja, vi skal legge ut hele dette foredraget til Ferguson, som tekstet. Så dere, de som vil, kan se hele. Men her, vi fikk med noe av essensen som forklarer at Amerika, det offisielle Amerika, har svingt så skarpt mot venstre. Og det er en universitetsutdannelsene, både lærerne og studentene, er en vesentlig del av forklaringen. De blir ideologisert mens de går på universitetet, og så går de ut i da institusjonene og i de store firmaene, og er preger disse. Fordi det som er spesielt, og her snakker jeg som en gammel radikale fra 60-70-tallet, er at venstreorienterte føler de har en helt innlysende rett til å forandre samfunnet sånn som de vil, fordi de er overbevist om at de vil det beste. Og konservative er enten skadelige, eller de må, eller de er tilhører historiens skraphaus, som vi kalte det på 60-tallet. Og når da Trump dukket opp, fordi bølgen med venstredreining hadde jo begynt lenge før Trump dukket opp, så går de rett og slett helt bananas. Fordi Trump er fenomenet som aldri skulle skjedd. Han er mot normalt. Og de bruker absolutt alt de har av verktøy, av handler som de drar i og trykker på, inklusive da rettsvesenet som de nå holder på med. De har tidligere brukt FBI og CIA og produsert historier. Nå er de over på rettsvesenet, og selv det går jo veldig tungt, fordi de har så dårlige saker. Det er ingenting å ta Trump for, fordi hadde det vært det, så hadde det vært på bordet for lenge siden. Og selv disse som holder på med perversiteter, eller har gjort avvik til normen, det klinger jo veldig hult i vanlige amerikaneres ører når de hører at det er Trump som har sagt noe stygt. Han har sagt noe stygt, men altså, Clinton fløy med Jeffrey Epsteins fly Lolita Express 26 ganger. Og hvis Katie Hopkins er til å tro på, så var trekanten mellom Monica Lewinsky, Clinton og Hillary sånn at det ikke egner seg til å fortelle på en åpen skjerm. Dette er de samme som da bruker en eller annen uttalelse på tape som er 8 år gammel mot Trump for å diskreditere han. Og dette er, amerikanerne har liksom blitt skolert gjennom alle disse årene til å se hva de er opp imot, og de liker det ikke. Fordi det er jo ikke bare kritisk raseteori, som altså er en omvendt rasisme. Det er jo også bruken av LHBTQ og transbevegelsen i ideologisk øyemed. Og da ser du designet bak den hjernevasken som amerikanerne, ikke minst barna, er utsatt for. Nemlig at du tar en marginal gruppe som bare gjelder 0,6% av befolkningen eller noe tilsvarende, og så opphøyer du den til normen. Og det tror jeg rett og slett ikke at er tilfeldig. Det tror jeg er en kalkulert plan for å ødelegge kjernefamilien og foreldrenes autoritet. Fordi vi vet at dette ble begynt å er blitt tilført store ressurser, og så sier de da på TV at ja, nei, men det gjelder ikke noen under 18 år. Jo da, det gjør det. De finner jo frem til 14-åringer som har fått bortoperert begge bryster, satt på kjemiske kurer og er ødelagt for livet. For det er det de er. Og nå, jeg hørte det i dag, kommer rettssakene på rekke og rad, fordi disse menneskene, når du er 14 år, så er du ikke, du vet ikke hva du gjør. Det har jeg skjønt egentlig, at unge mennesker, helt opp til mange og 20 år, vet ikke hva de gjør. Og det har disse arkitektene bak dette transfenomenet og forstått og utnyttet. Og så har det altså stått klinikker klare til å både gi dem kjemisk behandling og operere dem og forandre dem uopprettelig for resten av livet. De kan ikke bli mødre. For eksempel, de går på disse som har vært på full trans, de går på smertestillende resten av livet. De har ikke i nærheten av å ha et normalt seksualliv. Og dette er altså den bevegelsen som har som motto at ingen er fri før alle er fri. Og da er det et eller annet med en massepsykose som har spredd seg i en bestemt del av befolkningen. Og den norske eliten og norske medier er jo vilt begeistret for Pride-bevegelsen, som har noe av de samme innslagene, og det er også til stede eller brukes på skolene mot barna. Dette er et overgrep, mener jeg, som lærerne de har mye å svare for de burde gått sammen og sagt nei. Men der har vi det rare fenomenet at 62% av studentene sa at de turte ikke si sin mening på universitetet, fordi veggene har ører, eller det blir rapportert. Og så er det spørsmål, siden det er en så høy prosent, og det samme tror jeg gjelder i Norge, så er det også i den gruppen som svarer, så er det altså blant såkalt liberale 3 av 4 som vil at det kun skal komme frem de meninger som de er enige i. Og hvis det er en lærer som de ikke liker, så synes de det er riktig å rapportere han til universitetsledelsen. Og det har skjedd mange ganger i USA, de har fått sparken, disse lærerne. Det er sånne historier at du ikke tror det er sant at det er i Amerika. Men du får ikke høre det av Akersgata, for de vil ikke skade demokratene og Obama. Og den samme mentaliteten har spredt seg i Norge. Og her er det sånn at ja, men det er jo bare, her er det jo bare idyll og harmoni. Og da er det vel ingen grunn til å bråke. Det er idyll og harmoni, fordi i Norge er det enda tettere kontroll enn det er selv i USA. Som jeg sa på podden i dag, hadde vi vært i USA, så hadde Per-Willy Amundsen vært gjest på flere TV-kanaler og blitt intervjuet om hvordan han opplevde behandlingen han fikk, ut fra et ytringsfrihetsperspektiv. Men sånn er det jo ikke i Norge, selv ikke innenfor FRP. Og det er en stor tragedie og et tap for politisk debatt i Norge. Og den parallellen Ferguson trekker er jo den alvorligste du kan trekke, nemlig mellom eliteuniversitetene i USA og de tyske, som begge er blitt antisemittiske. Og det står ikke noe bedre til i Norge. Tenk over det. Nå skal vi da over på noe håpefullt, og det er et intervju med en fantastisk, hun er debattredaktør i Newsweek, så det skjer ting i USA. Hun har et veldig spesielt navn. Etter Sargon til etternavn. Hun er jødisk, amerikansk, hun er meget veltalende, meget smart, og hun har en sjarme som gjør at hun blir invitert hos Bill Maher. Han er altså talkshow-host på HBO-kanalen, og han tillater seg da å være ironisk på Bidens bekostning, fordi han er på riktig side. Men så har han hun Sargon og en annen fyr som jeg ikke kjenner som gjest, og så spør han hva er Conservative Action Political Committee, Action Committee, hva er CPAC? Jo, han vet jo det, men han bare lurer på hva som blir sagt, om det er i alvor, for han hekter seg opp i noe Jack Posobiec har sagt. spør, dette i alvor eller det ironi? Og det viser jo bare at han selv ikke forstår det språket som høyresiden i USA snakker. Og det merker vi jo også i Aftenposten. Når Øystein Steiro nå har skrevet 2-3 kommentarer om først Christina Pletten og så den nye korrespondenten Kjetil Hansson, så nå har du også Tove Bjørgaas og Anders Tvegård. Ingen av dem er i stand til å formidle hva MAGA-bevegelsen og de nye alternative mediene står for, og hva de rapporterer. Og da skjønner du ingenting i dagens Amerika. Vær så god, Steve Bannon. The floor is yours.
All right, welcome. Welcome. I just wanted to say welcome to the end of democracy. We're here to overthrow it completely. We didn't get all the way there on January 6th, but we will endeavor to get rid of it and replace it with this right here. We'll replace it with this right here.
All right, amen.
CPAC, do you know what that is? That is the conservative, what is it?
Unfortunately.
What is PAC?
Political Action Committee.
Political Action Committee, okay. Yeah. It's their big convention every year. It's like corporations have a big convention, they have their big convention. I made jokes about it every year, but I can't remember the last time we did. It goes way back. I remember once calling it the Woodstock for the mentally impaired. But in years past, it was like the most conservative commentators and senators and governors. And okay, this year, there's a guy, I've heard this name, I don't know who he is, Jack Prozobic. He's doing sort of like a roundtable discussion, you know, it's a convention, they have these things. This is a quote, "Welcome to the end of democracy. We are here to overthrow it completely. We didn't get all the way there on January 6th. But we will endeavor to get rid of it." Am I missing an irony here? Am I missing a joke? Or is it, as it seems now, they are saying the quiet part out loud?
Yeah.
That they are not, this is CPA, this is their big, this is Republican, conservative, their big convention, and you have a guy like this and the crowd is loving it. Welcome to the end of democracy, we're here to overthrow it. January 6th was good, now we're gonna finish the job. Thoughts?
It's scary.
Thoughts on that?
Bill, that was a joke about Trump making a joke about being a dictator day one in office. That is an ironic take on how the liberal media
Well, that was my question. Am I missing the irony?
Conservatives, I think so. Yes, it's a joke.
Really?
But, yeah, and I think more to the point. To you, Bill, and to
keep your day job, Jack.
This is the primal scream of a dying regime. Pray for our enemies, because we're going medieval on these people. Putin's not got a free shot on all these networks lying about the people. The people have had a belly full of it. I know you don't like hearing that. I know you try to do everything in the world to stop that, but you're not going to stop it. It's going to happen.
And where do people like that go to share the big lie? MAGA Media. I wish, in my soul, I wish that any of these people had a conscience.
Ask yourself, what is my task and what is my purpose? If that answer is to save my country, this country will be saved.
War Room. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
It's Tuesday, 5 March, in the year of our Lord, 2024. It is not often on the Bill Maher show he gets put in his place. We have the extraordinary young woman here who did that, Batya Unger Sargon from Newsweek magazine and Brooklyn. I've done Bill Maher a lot. I know those guys quite well. That was really, it happens very rarely on his show, but you knew the details. And we'll talk about what happened else. Talk to me about that. Talk to me about going in the lion's den. It's what, 3,000 people at the old, it's the CBS studios over on Highland in LA. Talk to me about being on there.
Well, I'm very, very grateful to Bill for having me, because even though I am on the left, I can't get onto liberal shows, because it's kind of like that scene in Monty Python where they're like, "Hey, we want to join you." And they were like, "Well, how much do you hate the Romans?" And he goes, "A lot." And they're like, "Right, you're in." It's the same thing with Trump. If you don't hate Trump, they will not let you on, even if you want to tell them, "Hey, here's how the Democrats could get the working class back." They don't want to hear it. And I just find it undeniable at this point that thanks to you, Mr. Bannon, Donald Trump became the voice of the working class and the voice of saving the working class from the handshake agreement between both parties to sell them out and sell out their futures. If you have arrived at that conclusion, which I think is the only true conclusion, you cannot get into liberal spaces. So I'm very grateful to Bill for having me, although the audience definitely didn't like me.
No, but this, I want to talk about it. You say you're a liberal or progressive, yet your books, this book is, and I know you're going to come out with a bigger media campaign later, but you know, Second Class is one of the definitive works out there. It's about to come out. How do you say you're liberal when I read it and I feel like I'm reading a MAGA writer?
Well, to me, Donald Trump is kind of like a New Deal Democrat. And this is something I tried to explain to Bill Maher as well. To Democrats and liberals, Trump is an extremist, but to Trump's supporters, he is a moderate, if not a liberal.
Say that again. This is because in the war room, we always have President Trump's right flank, right? We always have the right flank. President Trump, the media and he's a kind-hearted guy. He's a big-hearted guy. He was very popular with all that crowd beforehand. He is, if you look at the spectrum of our policy recommendations and beliefs, President Trump is kind of a moderate, right? That's why he's building a coalition.
100%.
So you agree
100%.
With that?
His view on abortion, 16 weeks, right? That was the Democrats' view until the 90s. His view on immigration, that mass migration is class warfare against the working class, that was the view of the Democrats until the 90s.
Bernie Sanders
in 2015. Open borders, that's a Koch brothers proposal, right? You remember that? Trump is pro-black. He's courting black voters. He's pro-gay. I hear that from his supporters all the time, and they love that about him. That is who the Democrats used to be, and now it is who MAGA is. And I say that with a lot of love and respect.
So how, talk about that as a liberal, you've been outcast because you take the side of the working class.
Yeah.
So how can that be? The Democrats tell us all the time they're a part, AOC and these people tell us they're a working class party.
No, that's complete nonsense. The Democrats are the party of the college credentialed elites and the dependent poor. So all of their policies are either about flattering the vanity of the rich or sustaining the poor that won't work. And meanwhile, everybody in the middle, the hardworking people who listen to your show, who you know about and who you respect, they were not represented by either party until Trump came along. And Trump showed up and said, wait a minute, why is no one standing up for the hardworking American? And what I did for this book is I traveled around the country and interviewed working class Americans. And let me tell you something, Steve, and you know this. Working class Americans, whether they vote for Democrat or Republican, whether they're liberal or conservatives, they all have the same views. Like, neither party is really speaking to them. They all agree, by and large, about the most important issues. Polarization is a totally elite phenomenon.
Walk us through that.
So the elites are very, very polarized. If you talk to somebody who's been to college, conservative or liberal, somebody who works in the media, elites, somebody who works in the political elites, they look at the party platform, whether it's the GOP platform or the Democratic platform, and they're like, check, 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 check. Whatever the party tells them is the good and the right, they agree with. So there's no natural connection between supporting abortion on demand and believing in climate change and supporting an open border. Those things were cobbled together because they are all in the interests of the leftist elites. And so if you're in those leftist elites, you're like, oh, these are all my priorities. If you are a hardworking American, those are not your priorities. You go issue by issue and say, well, you know, I'm a Christian, so I would never get an abortion, but I know somebody who was raped, so I don't want it to be banned. You say, well, I have a family member who's gay and I want them to be treated with dignity, but I have a child in school and I'm terrified of the trans agenda, right? You have this, because the American working class is deeply tolerant. And so that is how they approach the world.
Hold it. Then I've got to bring my other, so hold it. Because, and let me say this, and I think because this book is getting so much, your book, and you're a progressive or a liberal Democrat, your book is the antidote to the book of the moment. And I think when you come out, you're going to see that. This book is what they're all talking about. White Rural Rage, The Threat to American Democracy. Now, they've just taken the same group that you've looked at and the same statistics. And do we have that clip I sent you earlier about him being on the morning show? Just let me know what's up. They take the same group that you've studied and traveled the country to do, and the same statistical analyses you've looked at. They have come to the exact opposite conclusion. that white working class, particularly white working class that are not in cities or not in suburbs, but the rural working class, are the most xenophobic, nativist, racist, and they say now dangerous group in American history since the Confederates and the Civil War. In fact, they make direct analogies to the Confederates, to the Southern states in the Civil War. What do they see? What do you see that they've missed or are misinterpreting?
This is such a slander on this great nation, and I say that as a Jewish person. I cannot sit here and allow this kind of slander of the American people to go unopposed. This book, this is the wishful thinking of over-credentialed college elites who have turned their back on the working class and who hate America. And this is their wishful thinking as their justification. Oh, we don't have to care about the working class because they're racist. You know what, Steve? Something that you have taught me first, probably before anybody else, the working class in MAGA is multiracial. Guess what? Donald Trump was polling at 8% of black men in 2020. He got 18%. He's now polling 20 to 30% of black men. You can imagine what he's going to get. The majority of Hispanics, who, by the way, the majority of that community is working class, they're also part of the MAGA movement. They're on the Trump train. This is absolute cope by a left that has abandoned labor to cater to their vanity morals and masquerade as the good guys while hating this country.
How did the Democratic Party, because I come from a Democratic Union family, and we split over the Vietnam War, right? My family left and they were huge Reagan. I mean, when Reagan came, and they, I remember in the 60s saying, well, Reagan's just was just a small-time actor when they were, you know, kids in the 30s. They became huge Reagan folks, right? Because they were Reagan Democrats. How did the Democratic Party, what happened to the Democratic Party that it left its working class base and really allowed it? Because Buchanan talked a little bit about it, then Perot talked about it, then the Tea Party talked a little bit about it, but left it open for Donald Trump to kind of run the tables. How did they abandon the working class in this country?
They decided to start catering to the college credentialed elites. They created an economy that was extremely rewarding to people in the knowledge industry and extremely punishing to people who work with their hands for a living. And the way they did that was, first, they shipped the good-paying manufacturing jobs overseas to China and Mexico to build up their middle class. Then they opened the border and imported an entirely new slave caste to undercut service industry jobs that remained here. And they, with all of this, signaled to the working class, you're nothing. You are nothing. You do a job that actually we rely on to exist. You are nothing. You only matter if you have a high IQ and you go, or these people are not all intelligent, by the way. You go and you get these credentials, and then they sit there and they trade in credentialism. They have no respect for this country or for the values of this country or for the value of hard work. They sit around in their universities and confer plaudits on each other. And then they say, oh, if you don't have a credential, you don't deserve the American dream. That was Clinton. That was Obama. Everybody's going to go to college. Not everyone wants to go to college. And by the way, most college educated people are underemployed and still making more than working class people. It's an absolute outrage. When they realized how much money there was in the knowledge industry, they increasingly started catering to those voters. Let me tell you something. 97% of donations coming out of Silicon Valley go to Democrats. The majority of Americans making over $500,000 a year are Democrats. 9 of the 10 richest counties in this country now vote for Democrats. And the majority of donations coming out of Wall Street went to Joe Biden and not to Donald Trump, because these elites hate Trump because he represents the return of the middle class, the rise of the working class, and the pride of the working class. That's what they hate and why they write this stuff, this drivel. They cannot stand the idea that people who work with their hands for a living should have dignity.
What in there, you can see if the fix is in, because they're in back of this book. This book, yes. These guys are everywhere, right? You see this?
Well, because you but see, in a way, you gave them the playbook, because you said in 2015, they're going to be talking about racism all day and we're going to win with economic populism. Yes. And this is what I wanted to ask you. I wanted to ask you, first of all, how did you know that? How did you come to this insight that the working class is where it's at? And B, how did you convince Trump?
Well, Trump can read a room. I mean, President Trump, you could see in 12 and 13, was coming to CPAC, that, and I met with him in 2010 with Dave Bossie. he has a great feel for people. Remember, he's a people person, and he's a marketer. He knows, and he has a great, he also comes from Queens. I mean, he had a great, he just has a great instinct. When I first saw him making these speeches early on, the CPAC or Dave Bossi set these things up, he was not talking with the nomenclature or the rhythm or the structure of the other Republicans. He was talking in a totally new vernacular, and people would lean into it. And I said, right there, you're seeing a change in American politics. President Trump understands, he you know, Shaw says only connect. He had a just a visceral connection with working class people, and you could see it every time he went. Tell you, let's take a short break. We're here, the book, and your book's going to come out in about a month, I think.
Yeah,
it is.
April 2nd.
Mm-hmm. I've got a lot. In fact, if we can play, maybe we get the AOC was chased around. Because you're from Brooklyn. You're from the heart of the beast. This is why Hillary Clinton also lost. Her headquarters was in Brooklyn. It was all hipsters, right? They had to be too hip.
Jeg må skrive opp navnet, for det er litt vanskelig å huske. Ungar, Sargon. Ja, dette har faktisk stor relevans for Norge. Fordi jeg hadde aldri trodd at jeg skulle si det etter min radikale fase, men dette handler faktisk om klassekamp. Det har Tucker vært inne på flere ganger, fordi folket er gjort taust. Det har ingen talsperson som kan ha et offentlig rom hvor de kan gi uttrykk for hva vanlige folk føler og mener. Ta to eksempler. Vi hadde jo to folkebevegelser mot EU. Den første ble ledet av advokat Arne Haugestad. Den andre av Anne Enger Lahnstein, som ble noe av en folkedronning. Begge vant, og begge tapte. Fordi dette prosjektet, når Gro var i Brussel og snakket med Jacques Delors, så ble de enige på bakrommet, og så fikk du EØS-avtalen, som da var en glidebane inn i EU. Og nå er vi støkk i EU. Det er en symbolsk ting at vi ikke er fullverdige medlemmer, men vi må altså forplikte oss til å implementere alle direktiver. Og legg merke til den økonomiske politikken, inflasjon, høy rente, og du betaler for strømmen som vi selv eier, fordi det er staten som blir inntektene på å eksportere fossekraften til Tyskland og kontinentet. Det er altså et ran på høylys dag, og den norske kronen, toppen av det hele, er at den norske kronen er blitt en søppelvaluta med 17 000 milliarder på bok. Stikk den. Alt dette er uttrykk for akkurat den samme politikken som Biden har holdt på med i USA, som er å trykke middelklassen ned og la den blø, sånn at den blir umelende og kraftløs. Mediene er helt i lomma på denne eliten, og derfor er det jeg sier at Dokument må okkupere, innta den plassen som Aftenposten hadde, fordi det er ikke lenger Aftenposten. Det er ikke lenger et konservativt organ. Det må vi ha lov til å si, fordi nordmenn trenger et konservativt medie som er mainstream. Akkurat som Batya Ungar-Sargon sitter og sier om Trump. Trump er moderat, han er mainstream, han er der amerikanerne alt de har vært, og det samme er Dokument. Vi er mainstream, og derfor så er vi veldig tillitsfulle, fordi vi vet hvem vi er, og hvor vi skal, og hva som er vårt publikum. Så jeg sier, bli med Dokument på denne ferden, få folk til å tegne abonnement, fordi vi må bli flere, vi må ha større ressurser, vi må ha flere folk bak kamera, foran og til å skrive, fordi som dere ser, denne karusellen, den snurrer bare fortere og fortere. Og jeg tenker at den ondsinnede propagandaen mot Trump, som norske medier bare legger seg på ryggen og velter seg i, den minner jo om den såkalte blood libel som jøder ble utsatt for, nemlig et rykte om at de trengte kristen blod for å lage de usyrede brødene til Pesach. Og den var, gikk på folkemunnet, og da appellerer du til folks laveste instinkter. Og det er noe av det samme med dette hatpratet mot Trump. Og det lager en så spesiell stemning i offentligheten, fordi det er ingen til å rykke ut og si hva er det dere holder på med. Det er det amerikanske folk som dere baktaler. Yes, det var dagens sending fra Dokument om tilstanden i USA og med skråblikk til Kongeriket Norge. Takk for i dag. God weekend.